plumbing problems.
So the reason to combine references is a factual issue under our law, right?
Yes, it is.
Whether to combine references.
Yes.
So I understand how this compactness, if you would, might become a fact if the case were being tried in the U.S. District Court, because some party would assert that compactness is this, and they'd be cross-examined, right? And someone would come in and say, no, 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 there's some other reason to combine, and you would work through testimony at trial, and you would produce something that would be called a fact, and then I could review it up here as a fact for clear error that's coming from the district court. How does an examiner manufacture a fact?
The examiner reads...
Well, where did he get this compactness notion? Was it in a handbook, or I mean, I know what the MPEP says, he's required to come up with a reason.
Well, I think if you look at the two references, and again, we don't read compactness as necessarily meaning smaller. The first dictionary definition uses the term more firmly united, and we think that's perhaps more apt here. I think, you know, you would share walls, it probably would be smaller, but more firmly united is a fair definition of compactness, consistent with what he said about simplicity. And you see the simplicity if you look at the prior art references. Triplex has three modules. You have to do interconnections on the sump at the bottom and at the top, and you have to figure out a way to screw those three modules together, whereas a unitary system avoids those interconnections. You have fewer
parts. But is an examiner free to simply use the examiner's common sense and the examiner's experience in the field to say, here's the reason why I think these two references should be combined?
Yes, the examiner absolutely is free to do that. As this court acknowledged in Dystar and in Kahn, Kahn was quoted in the Supreme Court decision KSR, the examiner needs to articulate some reasoning with some rational underpinning for doing the combination. But in Dystar, this court had specifically noted you don't have to find it in the reference itself. You can find, for example, because it's stronger, cheaper, cleaner, faster, lighter, smaller, more durable, or more efficient. More simple would certainly fall into that category. And that's really what we're doing.
So we are relying considerably on the experience, expertise, if you will, of the examiner, as the examiner looks at the prior art to decide whether there would be a reason, if so, what for a combination. Because it's going to become then a fact, and then if the board on review says, oh yes, we like that rationale, then it becomes a fact upon which we can only quibble with it if we find there was no substantial evidence to support it, right?
I agree that is the standard, Your Honor. It's a very favorable standard.
It's giving the Patent Office, isn't that a real thumb on the scale in a 103 analysis that doesn't exist in a district court? Isn't it a lot easier for you all to figure out that references ought to be combined and then for us to have a whole lot less authority to undo that?
Certainly, as far as making our prima facie case, it gives us a very sound basis for doing that. But before us, the applicant can always come back.
Does it make sense that there ought to be a different standard?
I think it does, Your Honor, because once the patent issues from the Patent Office, it has a presumption of validity, which is then very difficult to overcome in the district court. It makes sense to impose a fairly rigorous standard of proof within the Patent Office for the applicant to show us, no, somebody would not be motivated to make this combination. They can do that.
I thought the argument might run the other way around and say it ought to be harder to get a patent coming out of the Patent Office because it's going to get the benefit of the presumption of correctness.
I'm not sure I understood what you said, but
well,
I think hard,
as I'm saying, if the, or it's, I suppose in what you're really saying is it's easier for you to stop the patent's flow at the Patent Office.
Right. We think it, or we, you know, we acknowledge the courts have established this relatively high threshold, and we think it's not a bad idea because it forces the applicant before the patent issues to show us why this is deserving of an invention. And this is a case in point here. We see a lot of attorney argument in the brief talking about all these supposed advantages and cost savings and all that, but that wasn't presented in any kind of evidentiary form before the examiner or the board. We don't see any kind of secondary considerations considered by the board, so we don't really have that to review. But if they bring that to the Patent Office in the first instance, as the standard would require, I think that would make for a stronger patent.
And I suppose with respect to the factual questions of teachings and what the references show and common sense, I suppose to the extent that an examiner takes a position that something is a matter of common sense or perhaps a matter of design choice of no patentable consequence, to the extent that the applicant feels that the patent office has pressed a little too hard on that scale and tipped a little too hard in one direction, the applicant can press back and challenge that conclusion with whatever evidentiary basis the applicant has at his discretion, correct?
Yes, we're very open to receiving affidavits to establish where the examiner, you know, misunderstood the prior art. But the examiners, you know, at least as far as making a prima facie case, are entitled to rely on their own reasoning for why one would combine references.
And that would it be enough for an examiner to simply conclude, an examiner goes out, does a search, finds two references that show everything except one little item. So the examiner, dilemma. So the examiner says, well, I'm just going to say that that one thing that's missing was just a matter of design choice of no patentable consequence, period. Prima facie case made?
I think that's difficult. I mean, I think it may well depend on whether or not he can support his conclusion that that is, you know, if it's the question of a nail versus a screw or something like that, that might be a design choice, that might be supportable. But other than that, you know, if there is an element missing, an element in the claim that's not taught by the prior art, then that might be a grounds for suggesting that the examiner shouldn't be calling that a prima facie case. But that would depend on the exact record, and we don't have that problem here.